Entertainment here on CITR 101.9 FM.
LGBTQ2I Night is a positive space for folks to learn about bike maintenance in a relaxed environment led by queer mechanics and volunteers. It takes place on the fourth Wednesday of every month at the Bike Kitchen on UBC's campus. Bring your own bike and fix them with our tools, come with questions and ask away, or learn by watching other folks work on their bikes. Beginners are always welcome. This event is entirely free to attend and there will be free pizza. For more information, visit bikecoop.ca.
Autolite and its 98,000 dealers bring you Mr. Fred McMurray in tonight's presentation of Suspense. Tonight, Autolite presents the story about a man who dreamed of someday having all the money he would ever need, and one day found a way to make his dream come true. The Great Train Robbery. Our star, Mr. Fred McMurray.
Well, Harlow, the team is all set for the season.
Always, Hap. That great Autolite electrical system in your car is designed as a team and works as a team. That's because every unit, like the coil, distributor, spark plugs, battery, generator, and starting motor, are all related by Autolite engineering design and manufacturing skill to give you the smoothest performance money can buy.
Harlow, I mean our ball team.
And the electrical system really has to be on the ball. It goes into action the instant you press the starter, and it continues every second the engine runs. And it works every time you blow the horn or turn on lights, radio heater, or electric windshield wiper.
Harlow, I know it's important.
It sure is, Hap, and that's why it pays to treat the electrical system of your car to a periodic checkup. See your car dealer or your authorized Autolite service station. You can quickly locate your nearest authorized Autolite service station in the classified section of your phone book under Automobile Electrical Service. Or call Western Union by number and ask for Operator 25. And remember, from bumper to taillight, you're always right with Autolite.
And now, Autolite presents transcribed The Great Train Robbery, starring Mr. Fred McMurray, hoping once again to keep you in suspense.
My name is Walter Beaumont. I'm 42 years old. I have no prominent marks or features that would distinguish me from any other plain, ordinary citizen. I live with my wife, Bess, in Oakland. If you saw me walking down the street, you wouldn't give me a second glance. The details of my appearance are very important. You see, they're what convinced me that I could execute a great train robbery. Bess and I have been married for 16 long and uneventful years. The year before we were married, I went to work for a toy manufacturing firm. I've been down there ever since and am now making $62 a week. 16 years ago, I had a lot of dreams and some ambition. But the necessities and responsibilities of our everyday living have cost me most of those dreams and what little ambition I had.
Walter, did you remember to pay the rent?
Yes, Bess.
Installment on the washing machine?
Uh-huh.
What about the payment on the car and the box spring and mattress?
Those too, Bess.
Oh, wished we had a little money left over. At least enough to buy you a new white shirt. I've already turned the collars on the only three you own. Well, maybe we can get you one next month, if we're lucky.
If we're lucky. For 16 years, it's been the same thing, over and over again. A new white shirt, if we're lucky. A new pair of hose, if we're lucky. The same thing, it never changes. Each night at 5:30, I drive up and park in front of a tarnished white stucco house where we've lived for the last 8 years, and I know that nothing has changed. But tonight when I got home, there was a change, a happy change, some relief, a new face, the face of a visiting long-lost relative, Cousin Eugene.
Yes, sirree, Cousin Bess, that's just about the best meal I've had in a long, long time.
Well, I'm glad you like it, Eugene.
One of these days, we'll have you over for a real feast, Eugene.
As soon as Walter's ship comes in.
Oh, I'm a plain man. The simple things in life are good enough for me.
Not for Walter. He's got ideas high and mighty.
No, not anymore.
He's got a dream world all his own.
Well, Cousin Bess, we all do a little dreaming now and then. Cigar, Cousin Walter?
Oh, yes, thanks. Thanks, Eugene.
Here's a light.
That tastes good.
Yeah. There's nothing like a cigar after dinner, say I. It's the finishing touch.
Do you have any definite plans for the future, Eugene?
Well, Walter, I think I'm just about ready to settle down.
Well, that's good to hear.
I'd like to buy me a farm somewheres and maybe raise some chickens. Always did like chickens.
You know, I think I would have done something like that one day if...
Go ahead, Walter. Say it. If you'd ever had the money.
Well, that's my problem, folks. Money. You gotta have money to buy a farm, and right now I don't have any.
Well, that's a shame.
Say, speaking of money, you ever been up to Reno, Nevada, Walter?
No, I've never been there.
We don't get to go to too many places, Eugene. Seems like we always have something else more important to do with Walter's vacation money.
Mm. Well, you've never seen so much money in all your life as there is in Reno.
I'll bet it's an exciting town, all right?
Oh, it is. Just about one of the most exciting towns I've ever been in. Yes, sirree. Lots of excitement. Lots of money.
I guess our type of people would never get up to a city like Reno.
Oh, I wouldn't say that, Cousin Walter. They get all types of people up in a city like Reno, all types. You see, people figure there's money to be had there, and money attracts all kinds of people.
I often wondered what Walter'd do if he had a lot of money.
He'd be an interesting man to watch.
Him and all his dreams.
Yeah, they have all types up there. Rich man, poor man, beggar man, thief.
What did you say, Eugene?
I said rich man, poor man, beggar man, thief.
Yes, that's what I thought you said. And then Cousin Eugene gave me one of those long, lingering, meaningful looks. Then he leaned back in his chair, smiled, inhaled deeply on his cigar, blew the smoke out in a thin stream and watched it as it fanned up toward the ceiling. Eugene had made some kind of a decision, and it concerned me. It concerned me very much. The following morning, about 11:30, Eugene called me at the office. He told me he wanted to see me on my lunch hour. He said he had something very important that he wanted to talk over with me, and could I meet him? I met him at 12:05 in front of the ferry terminal. It's not too long a ferry boat ride over to Richmond, and I figured I could be back to work on time. I'll just eat my lunch while you go ahead and talk, Eugene. Is that all right?
Oh, sure. Go right ahead, Gus Walter. Best fix your lunch every day?
Oh, yeah. Every day. As far back as I can remember. You'd be surprised how much money it saves.
Mm-hmm. Walter, what would you do if I gave you one half of, say, $25,000?
Excuse me, for a minute, I thought you said $25,000.
I did?
What are you talking about, Eugene?
Well, you're a dreamer, so am I. There's only one way to make our dreams come true. We have to buy them, Cousin Walter, with money. That's why I've picked you.
Picked me?
Last night at the dinner table, I said there was a lot of money in Reno, Nevada.
That's right, you did.
Now, some of this money stays in Reno, and some of it goes elsewhere. Do you follow me?
No, not quite.
Well, some of it goes to banks, like banks here in Oakland and San Francisco.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Now, how does it get to these banks? Well, some of it they drive, some of it they fly, and some of it they load on the mail car of a train. You follow me?
Go ahead, Eugene. Go ahead.
The train they load it on leaves the city of Reno every Thursday morning at 11 o'clock. It arrives in San Francisco at 4:30 in the afternoon. Do you follow me now?
Yes.
After the train leaves Reno, it passes through a place called Soda Springs at 10 minutes to 1. Then there follows a stretch of about 20 minutes before it passes a place called Dutch Flat, a stretch of nothing but lonely, dry desert.
Go on, Eugene.
And
go on.
If one gentleman was to get on the train in Reno and another gentleman was to drive a car to a deserted junction in between Soda Springs and Dutch Flat...
The train could be stopped, the money taken off, and the gentlemen well on their way before the authorities could be warned.
Why, Cousin Walter, do you realize what you've just suggested?
Yes, Eugene, I've just suggested that we rob a train. The ferry boat pulled into the Richmond Landing and Eugene got off. As he stepped down the gangplank, he turned around, smiled, and waved at me and disappeared into the crowd. The following day at work, I had a hard time trying to concentrate on a new shipment of toy atomic tanks we'd gotten in. Right after lunch, the phone on my desk began to ring. I let it ring a couple of times. I was almost afraid to pick it up. Afraid that it might not be Eugene. Hello?
Hello, Cousin Walter?
Yes.
Done much thinking about that matter we discussed?
Yes, I have. But, Eugene, I was thinking, how can just the two of us...
Oh, it's very simple. I've worked for weeks on this plan, and you must have complete faith in me.
Oh, I do, Eugene, I do. But what about Bess? How will I explain it to her?
Oh, now you just leave that to me.
Yes, but eventually I'm going to...
Eventually you can tell her. And, Cousin Walter...
Yes?
What's more, I know she'll understand.
And so it begins. It's the kind of a thrill that comes once in a lifetime. When I was just a small boy, I had play-acted it out many times, but now it was a reality. I was going to rob a train of an estimated $25,000. We decided on a date. The robbery would take place 2 weeks from the following Thursday. That would give us ample time to prepare everything. And every day on my lunch hour, we would go over our plans, step by step.
Now, the baggage car is in between the regular car and the mail car. There are two guards in the mail car, one man in the baggage car. Now, once we get past the man in the baggage car, our problem is solved. But timing is the most important thing, Cousin Walter.
Absolutely. I realize that, Eugene. It must be timed to the split second.
As you see, it takes 10 minutes to get to the junction where the man in the automobile should be waiting.
10 minutes, right.
The emergency cord should be pulled about 30 seconds before the junction is reached. No sense to upset the passengers.
Uh-huh.
Now, what about your job, Cousin Walter? Will they let you take a week off?
Oh, I'm sure they will. Sure, they'll let me off. But I'm still worried about Bess, Eugene.
Oh, now, don't you worry about her. I'll talk to Bess. You just leave it to me. I'll talk to her.
And he did. He wove Bess around his finger as if she'd been putty. By the time he was through with her, she was begging me to take a week off and go somewhere. We'll find the money to pay for the trip somewhere, she said. But when Eugene suggested he'd finance the trip, that was the clincher. He told Bess he was going to take me up to the Hillary Lodge at Lake Tahoe for some fishing. Only he didn't finance the trip, I did. With the $178 I drew out of our savings account at the bank. We needed money for our hotel room in Reno, the train ticket we had to buy, and for the gun we needed. The rest of the week went fast. And then it was Friday night, and we were ready to leave. Eugene was waiting out in my car while I was finishing packing.
Oh, Walter.
Now, look, Bess, it's only for a week.
I know, but... Well, here, Walter, here are your other two shirts. You want to look nice and neat. Here, put them in the suitcase.
Fine. There. Well, I guess I'm all set. I better hurry.
Walter, you will take care of yourself.
Oh, of course I will, Bess. Now, don't you worry. I'll be all right. Well, all set, Eugene.
Oh, good.
Oh, Eugene.
Yes, Cousin Bess?
You take care of my Walter. Where'd you say you were staying?
The Hillary Lodge. It's near the lake.
Oh, Walter.
Now, look, Bess. If I don't write, please don't get worried. Promise me?
Yes, I promise.
Well, goodbye, dear.
Goodbye, Walter. Jean, take care, and have a good time.
Bye.
Well, we're on our way, Eugene.
Yep.
You know, the next time I drive down this street, I'll be a rich man.
Yep.
People like Bess are wrong, Eugene.
Wrong?
Yeah. Who says dreams don't come true?
Autolite is bringing you Mr. Fred McMurray in The Great Train Robbery, tonight's presentation in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
Say, Hap, talking about the first two-unit, 6-volt automotive electrical system used as original equipment...
Talking about what?
Why, about the forerunner of today's modern and precision-made automotive electrical system.
Oh.
Why, everyone knows Autolite engineers developed it 42 years ago.
Well, let's talk about baseball, Harlow. The season's underway.
Just like players on a winning ball team, every unit of the Autolite electrical system has to work with every other unit of the system to give you the smooth, economical performance you just normally expect from a car. That goes for the coil, distributor, starting motor, generator, battery, spark plugs, voltage regulator, and their thousands of component parts.
You're talking about teamwork, eh, Harlow?
I sure am, Hap, because every unit of the Autolite electrical system is related by Autolite engineering design and manufacturing skill to give you the smoothest performance money can buy. So when your Autolite-equipped car needs replacements, insist on the best, Autolite original service parts. And remember, from bumper to tail light, you're always right with Autolite.
Now, Autolite brings back to our Hollywood soundstage Mr. Fred McMurray in Elliot Lewis's production of The Great Train Robbery, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Cousin Eugene and I arrived in Reno, Nevada late Friday night. When we got to Reno, we registered in one of the nicer hotels and stayed there for most of the following 3 days, just going out for our meals. On Monday, we left Reno for a short while and drove to the junction about 13 miles from Soda Springs. Eugene pointed out all the landmarks. This was where the train was to be stopped by pulling the emergency cord. Then on Tuesday, we went down to the train station and bought a ticket for the train leaving Thursday morning. On the way back to our hotel, we stopped in at one of the gambling casinos on the main street, and Eugene started putting nickels in the slot machine. Hey, Eugene, I surely hope you don't throw away your share of the money on things like this.
No need to worry about that, Cousin Walter. I'm for chickens. Well, day after tomorrow is the day.
Yeah, day after tomorrow.
How do you feel, Cousin Walter?
Well, excited. I don't know how to thank you, Eugene.
Oh, now there's no need for that.
And you're to be commended, too. Your plan is foolproof. Of course, I've never handled a gun before, but don't worry about that.
Did you say gun, Cousin Walter?
Well, yes.
Oh, I'm afraid you won't be handling the gun. I will.
Well, you'll be driving the car. You won't have need for a gun, Eugene.
But the positions are just reversed. I'll be on the train and you'll be in the car.
Me in the car?
I'm sorry, Cousin.
Wait a minute. Eugene, you've missed the most important part of our plan.
Huh?
This could very well cause it to fail.
Well, what are you talking about?
Identification. Our descriptions. Eugene, look at me.
What?
Look at me.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now describe me.
Well,
go ahead, describe me. Look at me and describe me.
Well?
Go ahead.
Well, you've got sandy hair.
That's right. And so have 2 million other men. Go ahead.
And? Well, you're just sort of plain-looking.
Exactly, Eugene. Exactly. Plain-looking. Now, don't you see? When the guards on the train try to describe me to the authorities, they'll have a very difficult time. I certainly have no prominent marks or features to single me out from any other plain, sandy-haired man of 42 years, have I?
You know, Cousin Walter, I believe you've brought up a very important point.
Thank you, Eugene. So, I'll handle the gun and you'll drive the car.
Well, you don't think for 1 minute...
That you're a coward? No, of course not. Wait a minute, Eugene. Let me pull the lever this time.
All right. What do you know about that?
You see, Cousin Eugene, we hit the jackpot. Our luck's already begun. We had dinner before we went back to the hotel. When we got back, Cousin Eugene drew out a diagram and we went over the plans again. All I was to take from the mail car was one money bag. Eugene figured that each bag ought to contain about $25,000. And with one half of that, he figured he could start a pretty good-sized chicken farm. It was close to 9 o'clock when Eugene shook me awake. This was the day. My heart was already starting to beat faster. I took a shower and shaved and got dressed. I put on my last clean white shirt. At breakfast, we went over our plan for the final time. Then we checked out of our hotel, put the bags in the car, and drove down to the station.
Don't forget to put the money in your suitcase, Cousin Walter.
Yes.
Are you nervous?
Yeah, a little.
Don't fire the gun, whatever you do. We don't want anyone to get hurt.
Yes, I understand.
Good. Now, remember, you've only got 10 minutes to get back to the mail car and get the money. Ten minutes, that isn't very long. Be sure and keep your eye on your watch.
I will. I'll keep my eye on my watch.
Well, it's time.
Yes, it's time.
Yes.
I'd better get on.
Good luck, Cousin Walter.
Thank you, Eugene. Thank you. This was it. I found my seat and sat down. I was lucky. The seat was in the first car after the baggage car. I wouldn't have far to go. I could feel the perspiration running down my back. I was ruining my last clean white shirt. The 50 minutes before we got to Soda Springs seemed like 50 hours. Then we reached Soda Springs and the train slowed down. There were no passengers at the station, so the train didn't stop. It just slowed down. And then we were on our way again. My 10 minutes had begun. I made my way up to the baggage car, carrying the suitcase. The baggage man was reading a newspaper.
Yes, sir? What can I do for you?
I'd like to check this suitcase.
Ah, forgot to at the station, huh? All right, hand it over here. I'll give you a baggage check.
Thank you.
Feels empty. You sure you wanted a check?
I'd appreciate it if you'd put your hands up.
What is this?
In simple language, a train robbery. Now, let's just start walking that way. Now,
that's the mail car, mister.
I know.
Hey, now look.
Now, just do as I tell you and no one will get hurt. Walk in front of me. Now, knock and yell for the guards to open the door to the mail car.
They won't open it for me.
Oh, yes, I think they will. Now, knock.
Okay, mister, it's your funeral. Hey, Red, open up. It's Harold.
What do you want, Harold? There's nothing.
Pardon me, but would you put up your hands?
What are you talking about?
You'll force me to shoot this man. I wouldn't want to do that.
What is this?
A train robbery. Now, I'd appreciate it very much if you gentlemen would back up against that wall. That's it. Thank you. Now, I'll just remove these guns from your holsters. I dislike bloodshed. And I'm afraid you gentlemen might be tempted. There we are. Now, let's see. Oh, yes. Here they are.
You're making a big mistake, mister.
You sound just like my wife. Now, let's see. Cousin said take just one bag. Now, there's so many, I think I'll take two. One apiece. I might as well. One. Two.
How do you expect to get off the train, mister?
The emergency cord will take care of that. Now, I have one more favor to ask of you, sir. Kindly open this side door of the car.
He's going to jump. He's crazy.
No, not just yet. We have about 30 seconds to go. Now, the door, please. Open it. Fifteen seconds. 10 seconds. Five. Four. Three. Two. One.
Now!
Now remain standing in that corner, both of you. I fasten you, Chief. Fasten
you. I've got it on the floor now, Cousin Walter.
Well, that's good enough. Couldn't possibly read our license numbers from this distance.
Doesn't matter, I've got them covered up. Well, how'd it go?
Perfect, Eugene, perfect. I will admit I had a few bad moments, I guess, but otherwise it was perfect. Look under these dirty shirts.
What? Well, you took two bags.
but I told you only to take one.
Yeah, I know, but I figured it'd be easier dividing it with two bags. We didn't even bother to stop for any sort of refreshments. We drove straight through to Sacramento. When we got there, Eugene thought we ought to separate, and we did. I hated to see Eugene go. I had grown very fond of him in the short time we'd been in business together. But it was a separation that you might call a necessity. When I got back to Oakland, it was almost 4:30. A good time, I thought to myself. I'll have the whole weekend to rest up before I have to go back to work. The house looked the same as I drove up. Maybe now I'll have it painted, I thought to myself. There was a car parked in front of the house. It was probably another salesman. I took the suitcase with my share of the money in it from the back seat and walked up to the front door. I had a wonderful feeling inside.
Why, Walter! Walter, dear!
Hello, Bess.
Oh, Walter, Walter, where have you been?
Where have I been? Why, Bess, you know very well
where I... You look a mess, Walter, but I'm so glad to see you, dear.
Bess, what's wrong?
Oh, here, dear. Come on into the living room and sit down.
But, Bess, I don't understand why you're acting so hysterical. I don't.
Here, Walter, put down your suitcase.
Well, I... Bess, who are these?
Oh, these gentlemen are from the police station,
Mr.
Walter.
Mr. Beaumont.
The police station? Oh. Look, Bess, I think I'll go upstairs and get cleaned up a bit.
Oh, there's plenty of time for that later.
Well, Bess, I...
Now, you just tell me where you've been.
Yes, your wife has been worried about you.
Oh, well, look, Bess, I couldn't...
Yesterday, I read in the paper where two men had been drowned at Lake Tahoe. They didn't know who they were. When I tried calling the Hillary Lodge, they told me you and Eugene weren't even registered there.
Oh. Oh, I see.
And I just got worried sick. Just worried sick. So I called the police station. Oh, Walter, put down that suitcase and tell us what happened.
Well, later, Bess. Later.
Oh, look at you, Walter. Your clothes all wrinkled. Dirty shirt. Oh, you look a mess.
Well, Bess, I'm sorry you're worried about me like you did.
Well, I'm glad you're home. You won't be getting out of my sight again for a long time, I tell you that.
Mrs. Beaumont, we're very happy that your husband arrived home safely.
Oh, yes, I am too, officer. But look at the condition he's arrived in. Oh, I'll bet he doesn't even have a clean shirt for work Monday morning. Here, Walter, give me that suitcase.
No, wait,
Bess. I'll just get your dirty shirts out of this suitcase and get them in the washer.
Well, I guess you won't be needing us anymore, Mrs. Beaumont.
Bess, please. Please, Bess, don't open the suitcase. Bess, please.
Suspense. Presented by Autolite. Tonight's star, Mr. Fred McMurray.
This is Harlow Wilcox speaking for Autolite, world's largest independent manufacturer of automotive electrical equipment. Autolite is proud to serve the greatest names in the industry. They are members of the Autolite family, as well as are the 98,000 Autolite distributors and dealers in the United States and thousands more in Canada and throughout the world. Our family also includes the nearly 30,000 men and women in 28 great Autolite plants from coast to coast and Autolite plants in many foreign countries, as well as the 18,000 people who have invested a portion of their savings in Autolite. Every Autolite product is backed by constant research and precision built to the highest standards of quality and performance. So remember, from bumper to tail light, you're always right with Autolite.
Next week, the story about a man who committed a murder and got away with it for quite a while. The story is called Public Defender. Our star, Mr. Robert Ryan. That's next week on Suspense. Suspense is produced by Elliot Lewis and was directed tonight by Norman MacDonald. Music was composed by Lucian Morwick and conducted by Lud Gluskin. Portions of the program were transcribed. The Great Train Robbery was written for Suspense by Richard George Petticini. In tonight's story, Joseph Kearns was heard as Eugene. Featured in the cast were Paula Winslow, Jerry Hausner, and Hi Everback.
Fred McMurray may soon be seen in the Republic picture, Fair Wind to Java.
And remember next week, Mr. Robert Ryan in Public Defender.
You can buy Autolite electrical parts, Autolite stay-full batteries, and Autolite resistor or standard type spark plugs at your neighborhood Autolite dealers. switch to Autolite. Good night.
We thank the readers of Radio and TV Mirror Magazine for again voting Suspense their favorite radio mystery program. You may read about the award in Radio and TV Mirror, now on the newsstand. This is the CBS Radio Network.
I got a stack of records here, a stack of records there. I got records scattered all over everywhere, but I'm looking.
Discorder Magazine has been supporting independent music for over 30 years, and it keeps on living by joining efforts with local music supporters such as Vinyl Records. You can find a selection of Vinyl Records' featured albums on the back cover of Discorder and can support your favorite local bands and artists by purchasing their records. For more information on their vast selection of new, used, and rare music, go to vinylrecords.ca. Astorino's is located off Commercial Drive in the heart of East Vancouver. It's run by the Britannia Community Center and is available to rent for anyone. Some of its features include tall ceilings, wood floors, accessible bathrooms, a stage, and a PA. Astorino's is an accessible space and centrally located. It's ideal for any type of rehearsal, information session, dance classes, arts and crafts sales, rummage sales, community events, and of course, shows and dancing.
Check out BritanniaCenter.org and the Facebook search Astorino's, or contact Maddie Harris by email at maddiefromlife@gmail.com to learn more.
Tonight, we take pleasure in bringing you Suspense, a weekly anthology of notable melodramas from stage and screen, fiction and radio, presented each week to bring you to the edge of your chair, to keep you in suspense.
Dr. Vitus Artogast, I presume?
Yes.
I am Dr. Artus Vitogast! Your new neighbor.
Interesting name.
Really? You think so?
No, not really. Just making conversation. Please, won't you come in?
Thank you. The music. Is that Martin Denny?
Can't be all Sturm and Drang all the time. So, you moved into the abandoned castle just down the north slope of Desolation Peak.
Yes. However did you know?
Have you been spying on me?
Because it's the only property within 40 miles.
Oh. Very well. You win this round, Dr. Artogast.
Come again?
To the edge of...
No, not really. Just making conversation. Please, won't you come in?
Thank you. The music. Is that Martin Denny?
Can't be all Sturm and Drang all the time. So, you moved into the abandoned castle just down the north slope of Desolation Peak.
Yes. However did you know?
Have you been spying on me?
Because it's the only property within 40 miles.
Oh. Very well. You win this round, Dr. Artogast.
Come again?
As you well know, we are in the same business. Competitors, if you will.
Good for you. Business needs some fresh blood. And not just in the operating theater.
I don't follow.
It's a joke.
A joke?
Or not. Care for a drink?
A drink?
Yes. Helps me relax. You should try it. Wait, you are over 21, aren't you?
What?
Wouldn't want to serve alcohol to a minor, after all.
What?
The sheriff around here can be quite a prickly pear.
The sheriff? You're worried about the sheriff? You're the man who threatened the entire world with your climate control machine.
Ah, the weather or not.
You conquered the Belgian Congo with an army of robot bakeries.
Ah, I should have robotized the native species. It was so confusing for the natives. Most insensitive of me.
You tried to use your super magnetotron to disrupt the moon's orbit just for kicks.
What can I say? As you get older, you learn to pick your battles.
And so now you just sit around listening to Exotica and drinking Mai Tais.
It's a pink squirrel.
When I was a boy at Madame Villain's school for hopefully wayward boys, all the other kids wanted to be bank robbers, military dictators, divorce attorneys. But me, I wanted to be just like you, a mad scientist who ruled the world!
Oh, just for a few hours here and there.
I modeled myself after you in every way. My appearance, my mannerisms, even my speech.
Really? I hadn't noticed.
But now I find that you're just a pathetic has-been, content to wallow in the past glories and fruity mixed drink. Ah.
It's more of an almond flavor, really.
So the time has come for me to take your place as Earth's Mad Scientist Supreme!
Is that actually the title? I should have asked for a sash.
The student has surpassed the teacher. Therefore, be warned, Artogast. Step aside or be washed away in the tidal wave of impending godhead!
Leaving so soon?
You haven't heard the last of Vitus Artogast!
I should hope not. That's me. Are you sure you don't want an umbrella? Ah, well. Dr. Artogast, you're back.
Yes, Dr. Artogast, I'm back. Oh, yes, I'm back, all right.
And you brought a friend, I see.
A friend? A friend? No, no, this is no friend.
Oh, well, in any event, you're both welcome. Please, come in.
No, this is just a little something I created in the laboratory last night. A product of genetic engineering. A cross between human and feline DNA. My imp.
Oh, that's nice.
Oh, you see how nice. Imp, menace him!
Ah, this really takes me back to when I was a boy. I experimented with gene splicing, too. Gave it up, though. Too many variables. Robotics are much more predictable. But I still kept one of my early experiments around, crossing a bear and octopus gene. Say hello, bear-opus.
Bear and octopus genes, you say? So your feeble mind couldn't work out the coding sequence for a human-animal hybrid, then?
No. It's not that. But I did find that human-animal hybrids had a tendency to be somewhat less trustworthy.
Oh, they do. Do they?
Oh, yes. And human-feline hybrids always prove to be the most troublesome of the lot.
Uh-oh. Then maybe I'll have to eliminate the trouble.
But now the octopus.
Perfect.
It has nearly the same degree of intelligence as a human, only without the innate aggressiveness and instinct for treachery.
Yes, that's all well and good, but that's not why I came.
Did you pop by to borrow a cup of sugar?
No, I did not. But make no mistake, if I was in need of sugar, I would hold the world for ransom unless he delivered the entire sugar harvest of Cuba into my grasping hands!
Ah, well, if you're going to dream, dream big.
No, I stopped by to show you this!
Why would you look at that? Ha! It's a recreation of my old invisible beam.
And not just a recreation. I have improved upon your antiquated toy in every way.
Splendid! Why don't you give it a whirl?
Oh, indeed I will. Indeed I will.
Ah, so close.
The invisible beam projector. It's gone!
No. Not gone, just turned invisible.
But...
Radiation leak in the invisibility matrix. Not a dangerous dosage, but you don't want to be standing around too long before you fix it. I can give you a hand.
No! You've done quite enough already.
Oh, don't mention it.
Be rest assured that I will not forget this.
Well, I should hope not. After all, I don't want to be tripping over an invisible beam projector in the middle of the night.
No, not that. This insult.
Insult?
Good evening, Dr. Artegast.
But...
I said good evening, Dr. Artegast. I forgot my invisible beam projector. It is I, Dr. Artus Vitogeist.
Of course it is. You do understand that the primary reason for choosing a lair in a remote location is privacy, don't you?
Well, it certainly isn't because you're working on some nefarious plan for world domination. What are you reading there?
The Carpetbaggers.
The New York Times bestseller. Good God, man, have you no decency? If you're going to read, at least read Comte des Gaules or The King in Yellow. You know, something evil.
Clearly, you've never read Harold Robbins.
Enough of this foolishness. Imp! Bring her in.
Bring who in?
Let go of me, you creep!
Lainey Long, reporter for the Slag City Ledger?
And your loudest critic over the years.
Dr. Artegast? What's this all about?
Miss Long, I'm afraid that I am as much in the dark as you are.
I kidnapped her as part of my master plan.
That's all well and good, but it's your plan. Why bring her here?
Because I wanted you to see it all unfold, since you've clearly forgotten how to do it yourself.
Junior, the only unfolding that's going to happen is when you have to unfold your fat lip from around my editor's fist.
Silence! Imp, my radio phone. Wow. Wow.
Mayor Edwards.
Mayor Edwards, this is Dr. Artas Vitagast.
Dr. Artagast, the world-famous mad scientist. Are you holding Slag City for ransom again? We'll pay any amount, just don't hurt us.
No, no, not Artagast, Dr. Artas Vitagast! Vitagast!
So you're not Dr. Artagast?
No!
Well, what do you want, Doctor, whoever you are?
What I want, Mr. Mayor, is $5 million, or else I'll unleash the protoplasma cannon on Slag City and make it match its name.
Sorry, we don't negotiate.
But you offered me anything I wanted when you thought I was Artagast.
That's different. He has a reputation. I don't even know who you are.
Dr. Artas Vitagast! Dr. Artas Vitagast! So you don't know who I am? Well, you will in just a moment. You've signed Slag City's death warrant, Mr. Mayor. The last thing any of you see will be the flash of light from here atop Desolation Peak! Imp, my remote control.
You're going to fire your protoplasma cannon remotely? Radio-controlled, then.
Radio-controlled. Radio-controlled, ha! That's as obsolete as the ultra-laser gun you set up here in the observatory dome. No, my protoplasma cannon utilizes the latest in technology. It is satellite-controlled.
Satellite-controlled?
With this remote, I can rain devastation down on Slag City from anywhere on the globe.
But why would you want to? Half of the fun is getting to see the fruits of your labors firsthand, looking through the crosshairs and squeezing the trigger.
You'll find out in just 2 seconds. Why isn't it working?
What satellite do you have it linked to?
The newest satellite there is, Tailstar 1.
Which is only in range here for 20 minutes out of every 2.5-hour orbit.
But I just tested it!
Which means you have another 110 minutes before it'll work again!
But...
Chief McGillicuddy, send all available units to Desolation Peak.
But... Wait, I have a hostage, Lenny Long of the Slag City Ledger. Miss Long, say something to the mayor.
Don't worry about me, Mr. Mayor. Come get this crumb bum.
You heard the Lady McGillicuddy. Send them now.
But...
All right! Enough is enough! Did they teach you anything at Madame Villian's school for hopefully wayward boys?
I...
Never give the hostage a free forum to speak, because they'll always say something selfless and heroic, especially Lenny Long.
Oh, what would you know about it?
I've been imperiling Miss Long since you were in swaddling clothes.
He has, you know.
Well, I'm not in swaddling clothes now!
Aren't you?
The baby ray! You shrunk me with your baby ray!
Mr. Mayor.
Dr. Artagast! I didn't realize you were involved. I'll send the $5 million straight away.
No, no, no. I'm just an innocent bystander here. I believe Miss Long will vouch for me.
It's true, Mr. Mayor. In fact, he just stopped Dr. What's-His-Name from doing any further harm. Turned him into a toddler with his baby ray.
I demand that you change me back this instant!
If I change you back now, the Slag City police will lock you up and throw away the key. But they can't arrest a minor. All in good time. And speaking of changing, Imp, would you be so good as to take young Master Vitagast back to his castle? I believe he left a deposit, so to speak.
Imp! Stop looking at me like that! I'll be back, Artigast! This world's not big enough for the both of us!
Are you certain? You're taking up so little space in it now. Dr. Vitogast, you've grown up so since our last meeting.
Oh, you won't be laughing in a minute.
I'm not laughing now.
I was hoping not to have to do this, due to the incalculable destructive power that will be unleashed. But you leave me no choice!
How am I leaving you no choice?
Imp! The beakers! Don't use that tone with me! Give them to me! When I mix the contents of these two beakers, I will have created the most powerful corrosive ever created! Oxychloride X!
Oh, you just made that up.
I did not! I heard it on an old episode of Lights Out.
Then you know what will happen if you mix those, right?
Silence!
Wait! Goggles, safety first.
Oh, of course.
You'll pay for that.
Threatening me, Dr. Artigast?
No, I mean you just ate a hole through my floor. I expect to be compensated.
Oxychloride X. It ate right through the beaker. Now it's loose upon the world!
And you consider that to be a good thing?
With Oxychloride X at my command, every government on the planet will have to pay me a king's ransom!
Except that it's not at your command. It's loose, and you have no means of stopping it.
Oh.
Vitogast, there's no sense in being master of the world if there's no world left to master.
But it's already loose.
Then we work together and find a means of neutralizing Oxychloride X.
Work together? I'd sooner see the Earth dissolved into nothingness!
When you were found as a baby on the doorstep of Madame Villain's school for hopefully wayward boys, wrapped in that very lab coat you're wearing now and holding a check for $10 million in your pudgy little hands, you were nudged down a career path. And you're so very close to reaching the culmination of it. Are you going to let petty jealousies take you off that path?
You're right. Wait. How did you know all that about me?
No time to explain now. We have a world to save. This one. Well, we did it. We neutralized Oxychloride X.
Yes. Sorry about your floor.
Ah, think nothing of it.
But by the time we neutralized it, the Oxychloride X had dissolved over a mile into the bedrock.
Ah, I'd been thinking of adding an escape tunnel anyway. So really, you did me a service. Saved at least a week's worth of boring.
So, how did you know all of that about me?
Ah, that's going to take a little bit of explaining. You know how you've wanted to be a mad scientist for as long as you can remember? how that very idea filled your every waking moment?
Yes.
And you know how you've idolized me for as long as you can remember? How the Von Blauenops and the Murdochis of the world were nothing but rank amateurs by comparison.
Yes.
And you know how you chose the name Artis Vitogast as a small boy, even before you knew of my existence.
Yes.
Well, there's a very specific reason for that.
Yes?
Mad science runs in our family.
You mean you're my father?
Not exactly. You see...
What?
The other day when I used the baby ray on you, that wasn't the first time I've done that.
What are you saying?
25 years ago, I used it on you in a fit of youthful pique.
But I wasn't even alive 25 years ago.
The sort of pique a young, aspiring, mad scientist has towards his elder. And better.
Wait a second. Are you saying what I think you're saying?
Only I hadn't perfected the use of the baby ray then. It de-aged you too far, leaving you a squalling infant with no memory of who you are. I'm not your father, Vitogast. You're my father.
Well, that would explain some of my dreams, but not all. Some of them would only make sense if...
If what?
Where did you grow up?
Why, at Madame Villain's school for hopefully wayward boys. Oh.
You were left as an infant, I'll bet. And with a sizable amount of money as a nest egg.
So, 2 decades before I used the baby ray on you, you'd used it on me?
So it would seem.
I wonder how many times we've been through this. I wonder who is whose father? What do you say we just bury the hatchet, so to speak? Be a team, a family. Even if we don't know who is who in our father-son relationship.
Deal. But first, let me find a safe place for that baby ray.
Ah, that should do it.
By my calculations, it should impact the bottom in 127 seconds.
In the meantime, we can recalibrate your satellite controller to one that is in geosynchronous orbit with this location, and then...
So ends This World's Not Big Enough by John C. Alzadek and Dana Perry Hayes. Tonight's story of Suspense. Suspense is produced by Blue Hours Productions. Tonight's radio drama was written especially for Suspense by John C. Alzadek and Dana Perry Hayes and recorded at Melrose Music in Hollywood, California. Drake Bell was Artis Vitogast. Jonathan Goldstein was Vitas Artigast. Adrian Wilkinson was Lainey Long. Janet Bond was Imp. Sean Hackman was Mayor Edwards. And Steve Moulton was Barrapus. I'm Damon Crawl. Next week at this time, tune in again for another study in Suspense.
T volunteers to record textbooks for those who cannot use print at the university. If you are a UBC student who is computer literate with an ability to read university material aloud and you have a willingness to learn new techniques, we ask for a two-hour commitment once a week. For additional information and to set up an audition, call 604-822-6114 or email crane.volunteer@ubc.ca.
And you're tuned in to CITR 101.9 FM. My name is Brian McDonald, and that's all the time that we'll have for Scald's Hall. Coming up in a moment, we'll have Canada Post Rock with John. From all of us here in Vancouver, please have a safe and happy weekend. Last year,